You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 322. And in this one, I got on Dr. Clarissa Ong and Dr. Michael Tuhig. Clarissa obtained her PhD in clinical counselling psychology at Utah State University and is currently completing her postdoctoral training at the Center for Anxiety Disorders at Boston University and CBT team. Michael is a licensed psychologist in the state of Utah and a professor of psychology at Utah State University, where he co-runs the ACT research group with Dr. Levine. So, Michael has been on the show a couple of times before, specifically to talk about acceptance commitment therapy, or ACT, for OCD, and I'll put the links in the show notes to those episodes. But I got Clarissa and Michael on the show to talk about their new book, The Anxious Perfectionist. So in this episode, we'll talk about what you'll find in the book. We discuss perfectionism, the research behind the book, learning to use perfectionism when it's helpful, and learning to be more flexible with perfectionism when it's not. How perfectionism can interfere with therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, as well as exposure and response prevention therapy for finding the balance with perfectionism, and so much more. I'm sure many people with OCD can relate to this character trait of perfectionism, and if you do, hopefully this episode helps you.
And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers affordable, effective, and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theOCDstories, or the link will be in the episode description.
So thank you so much to Clarissa and Michael for their time, and of course, thank you to you guys, as always, for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here they are.
Welcome to the show, Clarissa, and welcome back to the show, Michael.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's good to have you both on. And obviously, we're going to talk about your new book, which is The Anxious Perfectionist: Acceptance and Commitment Therapy Skills to Deal with Anxiety, Stress, and Worry Driven by Perfectionism. So, you know, I'm looking forward to discussing this because I know that perfectionism is A, not something I've really covered on the podcast in any detail. And B, I know that it probably affects many of my listeners. So I think many people will relate to this. But initially, it'd be good if you could just briefly describe and tell us about yourselves and what you do.
So I'm currently doing my postdoctoral training at Boston University, working with Stefan Hoffman, and I'm also doing clinical work at CB Team. And in the fall, I'll be starting a faculty position at the University of Toledo.
Nice. Thank you. And Mike?
Yeah, and I am a professor at Utah State University. And the way I know Clarissa is before she went off and did her own thing, she was my grad student for 5 years. So we did a lot of work together and all the research that sort of led to this book.
Awesome. So, yeah, let's, you know, a very broad question initially is what's the book about, and specifically kind of what will it cover or what will people find inside?
So the book is essentially, it's a self-help book for people who struggle with problematic perfectionism. And because Mike and I do a lot of research on ACT, and in fact, the research that the book is based on was ACT-based, the skills that we describe in the book are mostly from ACT. So they entail like practicing openness to difficult feelings, you know, observing thoughts, orienting toward the things we care about, and so on.
Yeah.
Clarissa, do you mind saying a little about that part of perfectionism where the book talks about like how you can have that perfectionistic urge and style and you don't have to give it up and you can find a way to, you know, still do everything you want in life and maintain your perfectionism as sort of a personality trait, but like find a more workable way?
Yeah. So because I think through, you know, our clinical work, because both of us worked with participants in the clinical trial, like we noticed that people, but like noticing that people like really wanted to hold on to parts of their perfectionism, because it's like having high standards can be adaptive. And, you know, I like this aspect of striving and, you know, working really hard toward things. So we talk about, you know, if that is working for you, great. And in parts of your life, or maybe that isn't working, where you're giving up more than you would like, so that you can, you know, be excelling, then how can we practice being more flexible around that? So we're not even really writing about giving it up. It's about how do we be flexible around it. So keep the things you want, let go of the things that are unhelpful, pick them back up if they're helpful in a different context. But I think we talk a lot about being flexible and being sensitive to like the needs of specific situations.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think I've kind of noticed that in my own therapy practice, where I do a lot around the inner critic, which is probably not a great deal different from perfectionism. And I've heard it before where they're like, I kind of don't want to let this go because it's the critic that's got me to where I am. Right. And I then have to kind of work with that to be like, yes, but now it's hurting you. So how can we keep the critic in a way, but in a way that's less harsh? It's kind of reminded me of what you were saying there.
Do you mind if I say something, Stuart?
Yeah.
You know, like I've really found, like personally and with the people that I work with, you know, that this perfectionistic drive is, it's wonderful in certain circumstances, and like to harness it and grab it at certain moments is probably great. And then just like a little thing changes, and maybe even that same situation, now you need to be a little different with it. And then there's these whole other circumstances, like maybe planning a family vacation, where it would probably be better to let that go a little bit and be much more flexible with that urge to like nail this down. And I don't know, that's not something that I think people are very good at, like changing our styles across situations and being very sensitive to when it might make a lot of sense and when it might not make a lot of sense. Yeah. And I think the book has that sort of like nice balance of like, you can have it and use it when you need it, but be aware when it might be good to let it go.
Yeah.
And even catch when it could be like detracting from your life rather than growing your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. What came to my mind as you shared that is like Rembrandt or Picasso, where I'm sure they were perfectionistic in some way, especially Rembrandt. His work is incredible. The amount of detail that's there, but I don't know what his personal life was like, but I imagine if he took that focus into his relationships, he'd probably ruin them.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I think I'm not going to get sued for libel here. If you read Steve Jobs, you know, biography, which I believe he, you know, recruited the writer, he did do sort of incredible things with Apple, but then it describes rooms in his house that have no furniture because he can't pick out the right furniture. I mean, like that skill need, it was very neat when applied in certain ways, but then in other moments I would imagine he wanted furniture in those rooms, you know, like it probably detracted in these other spots.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good example. So it'd be, you know, we mentioned before starting the show about the research that led to this book. So it would be good if you could share your review about the research and also where OCD came into that research.
So the main piece of research that sort of inspired the book was a randomized controlled trial that we did testing ACT as an intervention for perfectionism. And we were trying to recruit people really like who struggle with perfectionism rather than with a specific diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I think we had maybe like 20 to 30% of people who did meet diagnostic criteria for OCD, if I'm remembering correctly. So that's sort of where OCD came in. And actually, when we planned the study, we were expecting a lot more of the participant pool to be struggling with OCD, because we think of perfectionism as a pretty rule-bound, rigid presentation. And when you say rule-bound and rigid, and if you think of diagnoses, like OCD is probably one of the first few that come to mind. Yeah. So that sort of, and I guess in, you know, Mike does a lot of OCD research. Like I sort of do like OCD hoarding research. So that's sort of where we, like a big part of what we do. So that's sort of how everything kind of came together and how this study was born. And it was funded by the IOSDF Foundation, International Okay. OCD Foundation. Yeah.
And if I'm correct, Clarissa, our three main diagnoses would be OCD, generalized anxiety disorder, and then obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Yeah, I think those were the main ones.
And part of what, I mean, if you're someone listening who's really into the current research, our interest in this came out of doing it on perfectionism rather than a diagnosis, is this idea of, you know, finding interventions that could work for core issues rather than diagnostic issues. And then if you sort of follow the thread, it would make sense that Clarissa's working with Stefan Hoffman because it kind of fits in that process-based therapy sort of mindset.
Yeah. Is he doing work with Stephen Hayes? Or is that the same? Are they writing a book together?
Yeah, I think they might be writing another book together, but they just wrote one with a third author called Learning PBT, I think is the name of it. And it's a sort of, it's a guide to how to implement process-based therapy in practice.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, I thought I recognized it from somewhere. It makes sense. And like transdiagnostically to find interventions that treat us more as humans and those character traits versus right. The actual DSM is this little rigid box that we're shoving you into. So my question was, and I'm sure there are many reasons for it, but it was more just what's the drive behind perfectionism or the reason for it? And what I mean by that is, you know, is it like a fear of not being good enough? Is it biological? Is it, you know, everything?
Well, yeah. One of the things that stands out to me about perfectionism, and I know we have like professional listeners and non-professional listeners. Perfectionism is egocentric. And by that, we just mean it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like it's an inner experience that the client would want to produce more of. Whereas an obsession in OCD is almost always ego dystonic. Yeah. So the feeling of the obsession's disturbing and aversive in the person. And so when the client comes in with an egocentric thing, it's very interesting that we have to, you know, find a way to help them see that this is worth working on. And I've always said that, you know, when people say, why do you work with OCD? Gosh, one of the big reasons is the clients come in and they're just like thrilled to work with me and happy that, you know, I'm there to help them get rid of this. And, you know, it's like such an easy collaborative situation. With perfectionism, it actually feels a little different. The person comes in and is like, I know I'm having problems in life, but don't make me change. And so if your question was, you know, like what's promoting this, I think achieving a perfectionistic moment, doing something incredibly well, striving to do something greatly, like that whole process, each one of those moments involved in it is so reinforcing. But then sometimes the end outcome is my family can't stand me. My coworkers can't stand me. You know, I'm losing sleep. Or, you know, if you kind of lead to the procrastination end, I'm actually doing poorly at work. I'm doing poorly at school. I haven't turned in, you know, my car registration or, you know, when I've gone to the doctor. I mean, the list goes on of things that we're having to do it perfectly. It becomes, it starts to become problematic in life. So that's why people would come to us. Is there like, I'm having these problems in life, but please don't take away this thing that's important to me. And therein, I think, is our conundrum.
And are they identifying their perfectionism as the issue? Or are they saying, I'm just having these issues and I don't know why? I'm sure it varies, but...
Yeah, I'll let you answer that, Clarissa.
Yeah, I do think it varies. I think sometimes there are people who say, like, okay, I know that it's, well, yeah, I think some people can say like, oh, I know it's because I'm perfectionistic, or I know it's because I need to do everything right. But I think by far, but I think most people, based on my memory, would say it's not because I need to do everything right, or I need to do everything right, but that's not the issue. It's that I need to be more efficient, or like I need to work around. So I just need to be able to get to my goals in a better way, but my goals are not the problem, right? Like my unrealistic high standards are not the problem. So I think even part of the start of therapy is just seeing that, like, hey, like these are some rules and standards you have, like let's reflect on these. And I think they may not be as explicit as we are saying right now. Like right now we're saying like, I need to be really successful, I need to do everything perfectly. A person may not be explicitly thinking that, but the way that they approach things is sort of guided by that idea.
Yeah, there's like one of my favorite things about this whole line of work. I don't know how we knew this at the beginning, but I'm glad we did. When we made our recruitment flyers, like maybe the word perfectionism was in there, but what it said is like, are you having trouble completing tasks on time? Do you turn things in late? Do your projects take longer than other people? Do you have a hard time finishing things because they're not done well enough? So we named all the symptoms of perfectionism. And maybe, again, maybe we had the word perfectionism in there, but we named all the outcomes. And then people called us and said, yeah, I'm not getting enough sleep. I'm busy all the time. I feel like I've never done enough. And then, like Clarissa said, then we slowly have to walk into, what do you think is like behind this pattern? And it's like, it's not the perfectionism, you know, to the client, like that's a good part about me. It's just that I need to figure out how to be a member of every group on campus and take 18 credits and have a boyfriend. And, you know, like I need to figure out how to do all this at one time. And then we would talk into like, what's pushing you to be part of 12 volunteer groups and take 18 credits and be on a sports team and, you know,
yeah,
throw parties on the weekends. You know, at this point you can't, you're not going to make it.
Absolutely. And I guess the question that comes to my mind is, and again, I'm sure this varies again, but like, I'm careful how I word this. It's, you know, some people in therapy, if we forget diagnoses for a second, some people in therapy are like, everyone else is the problem. And then you've got, almost attachment theory comes to mind. And then you've got, or you've got some people in therapy, like it's all me, it's all in, you know, I'm the issue, or it's all resonating in me. Yeah, you've got the people that implode or explode. To be quite general about it, is that similar with not procrastination, perfectionism?
Yeah,
where people are like, where is it either differs or they're like, no, I'm not perfectionistic, I just have a high standards. It's everyone else who's lazy or doesn't care about things on time or to a good standard. Or yeah, I guess.
Do you mind if I answer?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I think with perfectionism, it's a reinforcing personality trait, and the person often finds it to be something positive about themselves. And it's only when that style starts butting up against things in the world can the person start to recognize that there's an issue. Like, you know, I don't know if this is a good example, but like my niceness doesn't cause a lot of problems in the world, but there could be a context where I could be overly nice and taken advantage of. My meanness, you know, probably causes more problems in the world, but there could be a context where meanness is the thing you need to do. And yeah, with perfectionism, I think the person finds it to be awfully reinforcing and isn't catching that that's also part of what's causing an issue. And yeah, that's because it's reinforcing. So that's one of the things like we slowly kind of process with the client, like how to use this effectively, how to bond with it and how to let it go. And it's funny. I realize we keep going between clients and book, but maybe in our world, it's all mixed together.
Well, yeah, exactly. So yeah, obviously the book is here, we're talking about it, but we're ultimately talking about perfectionism and So, I guess the other question that came to my mind was, I'm sure perfectionism interferes with therapy a lot. And maybe there's benefits to it where it actually helps therapy. But I'm sure there's a lot of negatives of where it interferes. I'm specifically thinking about OCD, be that treating OCD with ACT or treating it with ERP or a combination of the two. Yeah, is there anything either you want to say on how perfectionism interferes?
Yeah. So I think I'm trying to think in the context of exposures. So I think one thing would be, so in perfectionism, there's this sense of like, I need to do things right, or I need to do things, you know, in the correct way. Mm. And therapy can feel like that, exactly that prescription, right? Oh, this is the right thing to do. So if, let's say, you're doing exposures, and the person responding to the rule of like, oh, I need to do things the right way, or I need to please my therapist, they may be doing exposures for that function. And so then having that function of like exposures being something that is, you know, enacted to practice a certain skill of, you know, being able to be open to discomfort, like you just switched out the rule, right? So before it's like, I don't want to touch this. And then now your therapist says touch it. And it's like, okay, well, this is a new rule. And I think that, and, you know, to be fair, like if that person's still coming into contact with a certain stimulus, like that may be helpful. But I think we also know that how we do exposures is really important, not just throwing people into a stressful situation. So I think that can undermine some of what we want to achieve with exposures. I think if there are ways to leverage perfectionism for, you know, better treatment adherence, I'm sure there's some balance where it would work out well. But I think switching out rules doesn't work out very well.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And the thing that comes to my mind, so I've had clients that I would call, or they've even called themselves, it people pleasers. Mm-hmm. And that reminds me of what you said there about there may be ways of using perfectionism to enhance treatment. And definitely I've seen that in my clients that are people pleasers, and I'm doing speech marks for those that can't see. I have tried to use that, of set boundaries of, okay, you're trying to please me too much, and this is, you're pushing yourself too much and you're getting overwhelmed, but I don't want you to stop because there's a useful skill in that. There's a benefit to it. Is that people pleaser and perfectionism? Is there any kind of crossover? Or
yeah. I mean, at least like clinically, I feel like there's a good amount of overlap. I think, you know, like thinking of rules that we commonly encounter, there's like, I should be successful, I should be hardworking, I should be nice to people. Like, I want people to like me. Like, these are big ones. And I think that's kind of where the people-pleasing part comes from. And, you know, Mike mentioned that there's lots of intrinsic reinforcement for perfectionism, but honestly, there's a lot of external reinforcement. Right, like you get lots of praise when you do well. People think sure. You're very smart, and people are like, oh, I wish I, like Steve Jobs, right? He didn't have furniture in his house, but everyone thinks he's amazing. So, you know, and that's very alluring to, at least in our society.
Yeah.
Like US, yeah. Mainstream US society.
Yeah. A good point. Anything you want to add to that, Michael?
Well, I was, yeah, it's funny. You can see me. I was definitely thinking. The thing that when Clarissa was speaking and you, Stuart, that was kind of coming to my mind with all this is, if someone is perfectionistic, and whether that's showing up in OCD or generalized anxiety disorder or OCPD, that a thing that might be hard for them is, if they succeeded in treatment, it's not that they have completely figured out how to handle their perfectionism, or they no longer have this feeling like it won't be, you'll get to the end. It's more like you learn how to be comfortable being in the middle. And that, like, inherently is an uncomfortable place for someone with perfectionism, that the success here is learning how to listen to it sometimes and not listen to it some other times, and how to follow your perfectionism at moments and how to nod at other moments. And if someone's like, when, you know, my answer is only you will know, and only the context will tell you. And you can't just go 100% all the time. It's constantly coming in and out and bouncing. And that, you know, even as I describe it, that sounds uncomfortable. And, you know, that is a successful treatment, when someone can learn how to be in that middle and be flexible. And, you know, I think the I don't want to say unfortunate, but maybe like for the client's mind, unfortunate that this uncertainty is the good outcome. And that's probably a little weird. That's not where the person wanted to be. The person probably wanted to like nail it and then, and then be done.
Yeah. Well, it's perfectionistic. Another word that came to me there was, as you were describing that balance is like a dance. Like it's, there's no concrete roadmap of what's right and what's wrong. You have to kind of figure it out and move with the music, so to speak, as you go.
Yeah.
Please, Clarissa.
Sorry, Mike. Oh, so before, Stuart, you were talking about like the overlap between OCD and perfectionism. So as Mike alluded to, we talk about like intolerance of uncertainty as a really big part of OCD and also perfectionism. And I think, again, like Mike sort of mentioned this, how it can show up in treatment is tell me exactly how you want me to do it and then I'll do it. Right. And as a therapist, I think we are like, yes, we definitely want to explain and provide rationale for exposures and psychoeducation. But sometimes it's a whole, like, I'm not going to tell you exactly how to do it. Like, try it out and see what happens. And having that be a more experiential process rather than an intellectual, like, I figured out exposures. This is how I do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can imagine that's incredibly frustrating for that person. Because like you say, they want, tell me exactly what to do and I'll do it. And you're saying, well, no, it's let's experiment. Let's try it out and see what happens. And yeah. Okay.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. I'll say a really quick thing. It's like if a client says, well, should I respond to emails on the weekend? Yes or no. And it's like, I don't know. Maybe depends who under certain circumstances. And that's a hard answer because it's like either I'm a hard worker all the time and always dependable, or I make a rule and it's no emails on weekends. Mm-hmm. And the truth is it's probably in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. So you've both kind of said things that I think link to this next question, which was, I'll say ERP, but when I say that in the context of both of you, it's ACT Enhance ERP, or you can just answer from like a traditional ERP if you want. But ERP based ways of exposing oneself to good enough. So, you know, good enough, Donald Winnicott that was his thing about mothers and you could say the good enough therapist and all of that. But I like the term good enough because it's good enough. But for someone who's perfectionistic, it's not good enough. So I guess, how do we do ACT or ERP to expose those people so they start to become comfortable in that uncertainty, in that good enough place?
So, Stuart, are you asking like what would be exercises we would do?
I guess so. But if you don't want to answer it, you can answer any way you want.
So, and it's interesting because I'm thinking of examples from this trial that had OCD, GAD, OCPD in it. And what I think of it is, it's like how to do things that are going to work for you in life. You know, where like an easy example is like you send an email to your boss. Okay, Clarissa knows me. My emails are too fast. So sometimes they're unclear and they have too many spelling errors. And sometimes I don't even think of like who I'm writing to. And it's like too many errors for someone of that importance. So I should like review it once, but then reviewing it 10 times and like making it kind of beautiful and poetic. And right now we're getting to like, this isn't going to work. Like it email should not take 10 minutes to write, you know, four sentences. So that would be an exercise I might do with a client where it's like, okay, let's write someone important a note. And then we, you know, that's where we'd play with. Do you get to read it one more time or do we just send it as is? And maybe at some level, I mean, we're learning a functional behavior. And on the other side, it's probably causing quite a bit of distress because now the thoughts are like, well, what if my boss doesn't think I'm wise enough? What if, you know, these people start to judge me? I have a reputation of someone who's clear in what I say. What if my email now confuses the next person and the wrong thing happens? And now you can hear, well, there's tons of therapeutic content that we can do diffusion exercises with and acceptance exercises. You know, then we send the message in session and right. And now we sit with all the urges to double check it and to maybe send a second note and, you know, sort of like the stuff that's happening there, we could use. I guess you can kind of hear I'm sort of an ACT-based therapist that It's a values-based activity, and you know, it's like learning how to send faster emails would be useful to the person and improve their life. But it's got all this cool kind of cognitive, emotional content that we would learn how to live with and sit with. And I'll just say, as a professional who, you know, I might have to respond to 50 emails a day, I have to learn to do it faster. Otherwise, that's an entire extra hour of work a day, and that's not going to pan out. So, you know, like, I definitely write, like, I wrote one to probably the biggest person in psychology yesterday, and I proofread it more than I usually do, but I did not send it to a friend to double check it. You know, like, I proofread it. There's no errors, like, there's nothing glaring, and we move forward.
And I think to add to what Mike was saying about the values piece, I think one thing that could also be interesting is shifting away from even just the good enough metric to a values-based metric. Right? Because good enough, it's like you're still sort of playing that game.
Yeah, true.
And it's like, so thinking about values as another, like, I don't know, metric by which to determine, like, is this good or not? Did I live my values or not?
Good point. Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. Thank you for bringing it back to values. So my next question was going to be around sort of act-based exercises for working with perfectionism. But I guess I'll change that a bit to, well, using that question in the book, what types of exercises, or because it's a workbook, right, that people will find in it? Kind of a workbook or not? More of a...
So it looks like a normal book, but we do say, like, take a notebook with you and write these things down. Like, think about these questions, write your answers. So it's not a workbook, but we ask people to kind of have something to write stuff down on.
Cool. So, yeah. So what are some of those things that you would ask? Is it just getting them to reflect on the stuff you're writing in it, or the specific, I'm thinking of, you know, like diffusion exercises or values type exercises?
Yeah, we do have specific exercises in it. I think we have some, it would be a creative hopelessness exercise, I think, is just, what is the cost of perfectionism? You know, think through, like, what you've done to try to, or perfectionistic things that you do, or things that you do to try to be perfect. And then we have diffusion exercises of practicing observing, like acceptance exercises of, like, practicing, like, sit in an uncomfortable position and, you know, bring your attention to the spot in your body that's the most uncomfortable. See if you can notice that feeling, you know, be open to it without shifting your body. So things like that.
Yeah.
So we have one for, I think we have one for each skill that we cover, which are the ACT skills.
Nice. One of the areas that, like, I'm hearing people, like, really appreciate about the book is the sort of, like, the self-evaluation, self-judgments sections. Like, what would be some of that stuff, Clarissa? Some of the writing we have on that?
Yeah, I think we ask people to identify some of those labels and practice perspective taking around the label. So sort of like, could you, so what are these labels, noticing, like, that these are labels that you hold, what's your relationship to these labels? And we do some perspective taking in that, like, you know, imagine yourself the first time that you identified with this label, like, how big were you? And what would it be like to, you know, look at that smaller person, and so those sorts of exercises.
Nice.
Yeah that is neat. What are you laughing at?
Because you're like, oh yeah, like we wrote it, and then you're like, that's a neat thing that we wrote.
One thing about the book, I mean, okay, you're gonna get a little insight into Clarissa. So she gave the talk on this, like, big RCT with all these, like, moderation and mediation analyses, like this, like, really amazing science talk, and everyone else on the panel were also just, like, huge names in the field. Like, if I named them, you'd know all these people. And Clarissa is a grad student, right? And she finishes the talk, and the guy from the book company comes up, and the book, yeah, comes up, and, you know, with all these other huge names, comes up to Clarissa and is like, we should do a book on this. And First, I thought that was, you know, so cool and so fitting. So at some level, you know, I see Clarissa as the one who moved this forward. I mean, I said to her, like, I'll happily help you, but like, this is you. And I think Clarissa should get a lot of credit for writing a really sort of beautiful story. I mean, it has exercises, but I don't think it's a workbook. The people who've reviewed it have said, like, it's like a very fun read in the sense that it like follows this like story of how one would work on this. And I think like Clarissa knows this a little intimately in the sense of like, you did research on it, but you're also like a very high achieving person who knows ACT incredibly well. And what's it like to be both things, you know, like, you know, Clarissa's highly published, worked at Harvard Med School, you know, and now it's working with Stefan Hoffman, like doing very, very well. And right, got a faculty position very quickly. And you have all that stuff going on, and like she rock climbs and is dating and, you know, like has a life in addition to all these things. And it's very interesting. I'm sure you can appreciate the tugs of like, should I be more academically? And I'd also like to go on a vacation or watch movies at night. And so I think I loved reading the book because, you know, I worked on it too, but there's a bit that feels like sort of Clarissa's wonderful story.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You agree with that? Very nice.
You agree with that, Clarissa?
Oh, I think my self-critical voice won't let me agree with that.
Fair enough.
I knew that was coming before she said it.
Yeah. I know. Like knows me quite well.
She was giving her job talk. Clarissa also wrote a book with me on how to do ACT, and she has her job talk, and it's like, here are books you could read on how to do these things. And I'm like, Clarissa, it's a job talk. You got to put your own book in there. Like you're selling yourself. She's like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that did happen. And I was putting a bunch of like publications, and Mike was like, didn't you write one on this topic? I said, I know, but it's weird. It's like, why are you putting your name on there? That's a, you know, so yeah, that's something I'm working on.
Yeah. You're not the first person I've had in the podcast that's said that, and they've kind of held back because for whatever reason, I get it. But the question that comes to me, Mike, you mentioned about Clarissa being a high achiever. Mm-hmm. Where's that crossover between perfectionist and high achiever? Because, for example, I would consider myself somewhat of a high achiever. I'm very driven in the areas I'm passionate about, and I'll work long hours if I need to and XYZ. But then I'm also extremely lazy on the weekend or in evenings now. I've set boundaries. And so I don't know if I would call myself a perfectionist because I don't want it done perfectly, but I want lots done, if that makes sense. So, yeah, maybe this is a question for myself that I want to know the answer, but I'll throw it out there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I do think there can be a lot of overlap and kind of, I think you sort of gestured like to a Venn diagram where you can be perfectionistic, not high achieving, not perfectionistic, and then there's the overlap. I think a keyword that you mentioned was like things that you're passionate about. And I think that might be like the distinguishing factor where with perfectionism, sometimes we don't want people to change their behavior. Maybe like, yes, like, you know, lead your two clubs and do it because you care about it and do it because it sort of energizes you because it's the thing that, you know, you care about and do it for that. Answer emails on the weekend if it's something that you really care about, as opposed to doing it because you're following a rule. So I think, you know, with high achieving people, I don't know if you feel like your work is work, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you think of your work as a chore. It's like, I like doing it. So, like, you know, people talk about work-life balance, and I often say work-leisure balance because like both are important parts of my life. Like, I don't want to not do my work and I don't want to not have fun. Mm-hmm. I want to have both. Like, if I could choose, I would still choose to work because I like what I do. So I think that's sort of, you know, and some people don't like what they do. So maybe if they didn't have the rule, they would work less, and I don't know, but they might like their life more.
Yeah, good point. I like that.
Yeah, I think function of action is so much more important than the topography of the action. Like, you know, we're on campus and we have lots of undergrad and grad students, and the concept of burnout is always out there. And I think burnout comes from powering through things that you don't find meaning in. And I actually think people can work a lot of hours, but if they find meaning, I think it's way less likely to lead to burnout. So Stuart, my guess is there's elements of this podcast and your clinical work that are values-based and have reinforcing enough moments to them that it doesn't feel that way. And you could probably name some other activities that you're like, if I had to do this a lot, I would burn out fast because I don't get the energy back from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've definitely done jobs before that did sort of drain me. And like the podcast, my clinical work doesn't drain me. I love it. But equally, last year, I did find myself hitting sort of slight burnout point where, and that was mainly because it wasn't because of the amount of work I was doing. I stopped all my self-care stuff. I wasn't exercising. Oh. I wasn't really eating properly. I wasn't socializing as much. So that's where I really felt stressed. And once I increased that, it was fine again.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, not even the amount of work I was doing.
If I can say one more thing, because I feel like this has been like bubbling in the back the entire time of this podcast, and maybe it's just a bit of a self-reflection, but you know, like for me, I have so many parts to my life, and maybe part of learning ACT or working with perfectionism or whatever the thing is, but this realization that maybe the best I can do is do well or good in all these areas, and to do amazing would probably negatively affect the others. So, you know, if you think like work, my activities, my friendships, my family, my love life with my wife, you know, like, I'll never be where I want to be because I would have to dump so many other things or let go of so many other things to make that work. And, you know, if you're someone who struggles with perfectionism, that's probably hard to know. Like, I will never do these things as well as I'd like to do them. Because the only way one could accomplish that is let go of a couple other areas. And I don't really want to do that either.
Mm. That's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm thinking about, it's definitely a battle I've had. But someone who's really perfectionistic, I can absolutely see how tough that would be. The question at the... So actually, this is something you said before we started recording, so it's not going to make sense. So I have to explain it now. You talked about a question that kind of stumped you or that you've forgotten what it was. So this is it. To both of you, if you had an imperfect billboard, what would you have on it?
That's what the question was.
Well, usually it's if you have a billboard, but I threw the imperfect in.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was joking that last time I was on this podcast, you asked that question. I'm like, I feel like this is something you ask everybody, and you're like, it is. And I'm like, I should have seen that coming. And then leading into this, I was like, I should really go watch some older episodes so I can find that question. And here it is coming back to bite me.
So don't censor yourself for this question. That's what stumps people, I think.
If I could have an imperfect billboard.
Yeah. What would it say on it?
You're gonna have to edit out some of the pondering. Clarissa, do you have one? I'm really working. I'm not pausing.
Okay. So yeah, I'm noticing that I'm like shuffling through different options and like, oh, which one would be the most imperfect one for this billboard? Which, like, we talked about how the function of perfectionism doesn't always change, right? Like, because that's a perfectionistic thing. So I'll just go with maybe like it doesn't matter. Just because in the back of the book, I say like, thanks, Eric, for reminding me that some things don't matter. And that's because I actually remember when he told it to me. I was stressing out over creating a poster for a conference. And I was like, Eric, the table, you know, the boxes aren't aligned. And like, what font size should I use? And what color should I use? And Eric, oh, he's my lab mate. And he's currently at Southern
Illinois
University. And he like turns to me and he's like, Clarissa, it doesn't matter. And I just had this like, oh my gosh, he's right. It doesn't matter. No one's going to look at this poster that carefully, or, you know, so yeah, I just say like, it doesn't matter.
Nice. I love that.
I like that too. And I also like, if maybe the listeners don't know, Clarissa's in Boston and there's probably a handful of people who could use that there. No, I'm not, I don't want to get hate mail from Boston. It's just, it'll make some sense in my context. Like I live in Utah, which it's a wonderful, wonderful place. Don't move here. We have enough people moving here right now. I'd have a billboard that says, be nice enough to each other. Because I feel like where I live, it's everything's pretty political. Because we're like a pretty red state and there's a lot of interesting sort of political things happening in the US. And I don't know, things just feel so contentious. And so I would say like, just be nice to each other. But then I'd add in the enough to kind of throw people off. Like you don't have to be perfect to each other, or be super kind, just like be nicer. So be nice enough to each other.
Yeah, I like that. Good billboards. And then lastly, obviously I'm going to put the link to your book in the show notes so people can go check it out. But is there anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
Not that I can think of in particular.
Yeah.
I want to
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I want to take back my billboard. I didn't notice that that's my, no, not because I have something else. I'm just like, oh, that wasn't a good answer. Anyway, sorry, Mike, go ahead.
you want to like nail it down more accurately.
Exactly.
Well, this is what I felt last time. I was like, well, this is, I could have had a week to plan this and you just got me. Stuart, maybe I said something like this last time at the end, but like I'm having this feeling of like a huge thankfulness and compassion, you know, for like the work you do, the work for everybody who like is doing the research in OCD, which I'm going to say something that, you know, as a researcher, which is kind of a, like a rough, long job that you don't always get a lot of credit for. So like, thanks to all the people who write the manuscripts, not the books, and like, you know, power through the meta-analyses and, you know, run the 3-year trials that can possibly not work out. And then all the clinicians who are, you know, every day like seeing clients, and I do that too. And sometimes it's very rewarding and sometimes it's like very stressful. Like, you know, your client doesn't show and they weren't doing so well. And now you've got this little bit of anxiety, like, why didn't they show? And I don't know, I just have, it's neat being on this podcast because it feels a little bit like one of these moments where all of us professionals who do all this work can get together and just chat and try to get the ideas out there to people. And it just feels cool to sort of see all of our different lines of work coming together and getting out there to people, and makes me happy to get to be in this job. Yeah. And get to do it with people like you two.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, research can absolutely be a thankless task at times, but I guess you do it because you're passionate about it, going back to passion. But yeah, you're right. There's so much work done from researchers that just never gets any, as much light as it deserves, I should add. It does get light, but not enough. So yeah, thank you to both of you. And, you know, I hope your book does well and reaches thanks. Lots of people. And thanks for your time.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. And if you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.